Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavala Bhagiri Vadadhari Jai Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Jana Vala Bhagiri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Jamuna Tiravana Chari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Gopi Janavala Bhagiri Varadhari Yashoda Nandana Braja Jana Ranjana Yamuna Tiravana Chari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Prabhupada. Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan Ki Jai. Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. There's a tulsi leaf on the harmonium. That's just cool. You're lucky. It's my lucky day. Better than a four-leaf clover. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. So today we'll hear from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 12, Texts 37 through 39. Which do we do together generally when we have a chunk like this? Okay, so I'll read 36, 7, and 8, and then we can chant 39 together. Vidura uvacha savai vishvasu jungisho vedadin mukato surjat Yad yad yena sujad devas tan me bruhi tapodana. Vidura said, O great sage, whose only wealth is penance, kindly explain to me how and with whose help Brahma established the Vedic knowledge which emanated from his mouth. Text 37. Maitreya uvacha. Rigyaju samartar vakyan vedan purvadibhir mukhai shastram ijam stutistomam prayaschittam yadhat kramat. Maitreya said, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rik, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matters of the recitation, and transcendental activities were all established one after another. Text 38. Ayurvedam tanurvedam gandharvam vedam atmana Stapatyam chasrajad vedam kramat purvadibhir mukhai. He also created the medical science, military art, musical art, and architectural science, all from the Vedas. They all emanated from one another, beginning from the front face. Srila Prabhupada has a purport here. The Vedas contain perfect knowledge, which includes all kinds of knowledge necessary for human society, not only for this particular planet, but on other planets as well. It is understood that military art is also necessary knowledge for the upkeep of social order, as is the art of music. I just find it really interesting that he puts those two together in the same sentence. One is something I wish we didn't have to have, and the other is something that's just life. Anyway, all these groups of knowledge are called Upapurana, or supplements of the Vedas. Spiritual knowledge is the main topic of the Vedas, but but to help the human being's spiritual pursuit of knowledge, the other information, as above mentioned, forms necessary branches of the Vedic knowledge. And text 39. Itihasa Puranani Panchamam Vedam Ishvara Sarvebhya Eva Vaktrebhya Sasruje Sarvadarshana Itihasa Puranani Panchamam Vedam Ishvara Sarvebhya Eva Vaktrebhya Sasruje Sarvadarshana Itihasa Puranani Panchamam Vedam Ishvara Sarvebhya Eva Vaktrebhya Sasruje Sarvadarshana. Others, please. Vaishnavis, please. Word to word, itihasa, histories, puranani, the Puranas, supplementary Vedas, Panchamam, the fifth, Vedam, the Vedic literature, Ishvara, the Lord, Sarvebhya, altogether, Eva, certainly, Vaktrebhya, from his mouths, Sasraje, created, Sarva, All around. Darshana. One who can see all time. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Then He created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories from all His mouths, since He could see all the past, present, and future. Responsively, please. Then He created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories, from all His mouths, since He could see all the past, present, and future. Srila Prabhupada's purport. There are histories of particular countries and nations and of the world, but the Puranas are the histories of the universe, not only in one millennium, but in many kalpas. Brahma has knowledge of those historical facts, and therefore all the Puranas are histories. As originally composed by Brahma, they are part of the Vedas and are called the fifth Veda. Om jnana timirandhasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurun militang jena tasmai shri gurave namah. Mukhaṁ karoti vācalaṁ paṅgum laṅghāyate girim jatkṛpā tamahaṁ bande śrī guruṁ dīnatāraṇam. Śrī caitanya mano bhiṣṭaṁ sthāpitaṁ yena bhūtale svāyaṁ rūpakadā mahyaṁ dadāti svapadantikam. Namā om viṣṇu pādāya kṛṣṇa preṣṭāya bhūtale śrīmate bhaktivedānta svāminiti nāmine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavari Paschatya Deshatarine Vansha Kalpatarubhyasta Kripa Sindhubhya Eva Chapatitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Nama. Translations again. Vidura said, O great sage, whose only wealth is penance, kindly explain to me how and with whose help Brahma established the Vedic knowledge which emanated from His mouth. Maitreya said, beginning from the front face of Brahma, gradually the four Vedas, Rik, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva, became manifest. Thereafter, Vedic hymns, which had not been pronounced before, priestly rituals, the subject matter of recitation, and transcendental activities were all established one after another. He also created the medical science, military art, musical art, architectural science, all from the Vedas. They all emanated one after another, beginning from the front face. He created the fifth Veda, the Puranas and the histories from all His mouths, since He could see all the past, present, and future. So there is a phrase that struck me from text 36. The verse doesn't have a purport, but we find something like a purport elsewhere in the Bhagavatam, back in the second canto. Vidura said, O great sage, whose only wealth is penance. So this is the characteristic of the brahmanas and the sages and the sannyasis. Their only wealth is the opportunity for engaging in austerity. Srila Prabhupada mentions this at the beginning of the ninth chapter of Canto 2, where, as we may recall, Brahma awoke to find nothing, find himself in the middle of nothing. And he's a little perplexed. So we hear, while thus engaged in thinking in the water, Brahmaji heard twice from nearby two syllables joined together. One of the syllables was taken from the 16th and the other from the 21st of the Sparsha alphabets, and both joined to become the wealth of the renounced order of life. And Srila Prabhupada writes in his purport, in Sanskrit language, the consonant alphabets are divided into two divisions, namely the Sparsha Varnas and the Talavya Varnas. From Ka to Ma, the letters are known as Sparsha Varnas, and the 16th of the group is called Ta, whereas the 21st letter is called Pa. So this is an interesting thing about the Sanskrit alphabet, which I didn't appreciate until I had gone back to school and was taking, I think, the first linguistics class that I took. I probably took five or six linguistics classes along the way, including in graduate school. And one of the things we saw, one of the things we learned probably in somewhere in early on in the semester, we learned this, what's called the International Phonetic Alphabet, where there's one character for each of the maybe 40-odd sounds that are there in human languages. And they're organized by the place and manner of articulation. And when I read that and I saw what they were talking about, I realized that this is how the Sanskrit alphabet is organized. You have the vowels, you have the semi-vowels, you have the diphthongs, and then you have these Sparsha Varnas. So from Ka to Ma, the letters are known as the Sparsha Varnas. So you have them organized according to the place and manner of articulation. And I thought, wow, Sanskrit's a completely scientific language. So they're organized from the back of the throat, ka ka ga ga nga, and then a little farther forward on the palate, ta ta da da na, and then behind the teeth, ta ta da da na, and then on the teeth, ta ta da da na, and then the lips, pa pa ba ba ma. So ka is the first of the Sparsha Varnas, and ma is the last. So the 16th and 21st form the word tapa. And Srila Prabhupada says, so when they are joined together, the word tapa or penance is constructed. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the brahmanas and the renounced order of life. And I remember reading this, oh gosh, very shortly after I was married, 50 years ago. And my former wife and I were living in San Diego, had a little apartment about a mile from the temple. And we were reading together one evening, I guess. No, it must not have been in the evening. I had a night job. One afternoon, probably. And I read this sentence. This penance is the beauty and wealth of the brahmanas. And I thought, I must have taken that to heart, because we were flat broke for many, many years. I couldn't figure out how to make a buck to save my life for some reason. And all I had was opportunities for service. My poor wife. So that was one thing that struck me. But then what we see here is the different kinds of creations coming from Brahma, as we heard yesterday, kind of secondhand. And he isn't creating these things. He's manifesting them. He's presenting them in the material energy, so that the conditioned living entities may take advantage of them. So I'll go back to Canto 3. So we see we have the Vedas, the Rig, Yajur, Sama, and Atharva Vedas. they become manifest, and then the Vedic hymns, and then the rituals, and then the subject matters of the recitation, transcendental activities. And then we have these Upa-Vedas, Upa-Puranas. So we have medical science, military art, musical art, architectural science. They all come from the Vedas. And then there's the fifth Vedas, the Puranas and the histories, Puranas and the Itihasas. So all these things, all these different classes of literature are created, manifested by Brahma, for the gradual upliftment of humankind. And so there's great benefit. Prabhupada says they're all necessary. It is understood that the military art is also necessary knowledge. I guess it just must be we're conditioned souls, can't understand how it is that we can't resolve a conflict by any means other than destroying lives and cities, destroying lives and property, making life absolutely miserable for people. I remember I was probably 5 or 6 years old. One was a Sunday afternoon. I remember this. It was a Sunday, late Sunday afternoon, twilight. I don't remember what time of the year, but it was like twilight Sunday afternoon. And I was in my bedroom playing with my little plastic toy soldiers. And I had some sense that my dad had been in the war. So that's all I knew about it was the war, and it was soldiers fighting each other. I had no clue what that was about. All I knew is that we were the good guys and the other folks were the bad guys, and that my dad had been in the war, and my uncles and everybody else in town his age. And my dad came in my room and sat down with me, and I looked at him and I asked him, "Daddy, who won the war?" And my father, who, it must be noted, politically was somewhere to the right of Rush Limbaugh, told me, and I've never forgotten this, it struck me, "Billy, nobody ever wins a war." But because we are conditioned souls, because we are selfish, this is necessary. Something like this is necessary to try to keep these kinds of things in check. As we see at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, Arjuna would just as soon not fight, especially considering who he has to fight. Krishna draws the chariot right up in front of his closest attachments, his deepest attachments, grandfather Bhishma and his teacher Drona, and Arjuna says, "Whoa, not for me. Sorry, not today. Think I'll go off and be into the forest and be a yogi. That would be better than all the misery that's going to be caused by this war." And Krishna doesn't accept that very, very well. He kind of slaps Arjuna down and tells him, "Yeah, it sounds elevated. Your arguments are quite dharmic. But when you consider the context, not so much." And then also, musical knowledge, musical art is also there. Humankind can express joy and sorrow and so many things. So all these things are necessary for the gradual progress of humankind. And it's wonderful, except in one context. There's one word Narada Muni uses to characterize all this knowledge in the Bhagavatam. Anybody know that word? Jugupsitam. Thank you very much, Bhrigupati. Jugupsitam. Okay. I have a list here. Jugupsitam means not so nice. Not so good. So I looked in the Veda base to see how Srila Prabhupada translates it, but before that I also looked in Monier Williams' Sanskrit-English dictionary. So Monier Williams gives jugupsita as detestable, disgusting, horrible. Words like that. Srila Prabhupada seems to concur. Some of the translations he gives for jugupsitam throughout the Bhagavatam are condemned, most heinous, abominable, contemptible. What? Yo, Swami, aren't you a little carried away here? Calling all this Vedic knowledge contemptible? So let's have a little context here. So we go back to the fifth chapter of the first canto. Watching the clock. A couple of more things I want to do here. So this is Narada Muni speaking to Vyasadeva, who is completely down in the dumps. He's just depressed. And he can't figure out why. And Narada Muni, his guru, is here to get him squared away. So he says, "Oh, Vyasadeva, your vision is completely perfect. Your good fame is spotless. You are firm in vow and situated in truthfulness. And thus you can think of the pastimes of the Lord and transfer the liberation of the people in general from all material bondage. Whatever you desire to describe that is separate in vision from the Lord simply reacts with different forms, names, and results to agitate the mind as the wind agitates a boat which has no resting place. The people in general are naturally inclined to enjoy, and you have encouraged them in that way in the name of religion. This is verily condemned and is quite unreasonable. So this is where we find the word jugupsitam. Because they are guided under your instructions, they will accept such activities in the name of religion and will hardly care for prohibitions. The Supreme Lord is unlimited. Only a very expert personality, retired from the activities of material happiness, deserves to understand this knowledge of spiritual values. Therefore, those who are not so well situated due to material attachment, should be shown the ways of transcendental realization by your goodness through the descriptions of the transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord. One who has forsaken his material occupation, now we're getting into a couple of my very favorite verses, at least in this chapter. One who has forsaken his material occupations to engage in the devotional service of the Lord may sometimes fall down while in an immature stage, yet there's no danger of his being unsuccessful. On the other hand, a non-devotee, though fully engaged in occupational duties, does not gain anything. Persons who are actually intelligent and philosophically inclined should endeavor only for that purposeful end, which is not obtainable even by wandering from the topmost planet down to the lowest planet. As far as happiness derived from sense enjoyment is concerned, it can be obtained automatically in the course of time, just as in the course of time we obtain miseries, even though we do not desire them. My dear Vyas, even though a devotee of Lord Krishna sometimes falls down somehow or other, he certainly does not undergo material existence like others, the fruitive workers and so on, because a person who has once relished the taste of the lotus feet of the Lord can do nothing but remember that ecstasy again and again. So I think I did this verse, Rasagraha, the last time I spoke here. So this is a quite striking assertion by Narada Muni that you've missed something. What you've done is wonderful as far as it goes, but what you've missed is what's really essential. What you've missed is literature that exclusively glorifies the pastimes of and devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Oh, and the devotees. So then we have the Srimad Bhagavatam, which Narada Muni describes in that chapter as a completely different creation from all the literature that's ever come before. He compares all that stuff to, anybody remember? Place of pilgrimage for the crows, the dump, right? In other words, he says, compared to the Bhagavatam, all this wonderful literature is pretty much rubbish because it creates, as some devotees have characterized, the Vedas, makes the Vedas into like a jungle of sounds in which people get completely lost, completely bewildered. Sometimes if you've been in a forest that you're not familiar with and there aren't paths, it's really easy to get lost. And you don't know which way you're going, especially if you've got a really thick canopy and you can't see the sun. And you just, you know, it's real easy to get lost. So then we have this completely different creation in Srimad Bhagavatam, something new, something completely transcendental, meant to effect a revolution, as Narada Muni says, in the hearts of impious souls. But for those who are fortunate, Bhaktivinoda Thakur tells us, the Supreme Lord Gaurachandra has taught 10 principles to the jivas. This is Bhaktivinoda Thakur kind of summarizing what we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, first, the statements of Abhinaya, the Vedas, are the chief proof By these statements, the following nine topics are taught. Krishna is the supreme absolute truth. Krishna is endowed with all energies. Krishna is the ocean of rasa. The jivas are all separated parts of the Lord. In a bound state, the jivas are under the influence of matter due to their tattvastha nature. In the liberated state, the jivas are free from the influence of matter due to their tattvastha nature. The jivas and the material world are both different from and identical to the Lord. Pure devotion is the practice of the jivas, and pure love of Krishna is the goal. Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains, the first topic contains the nature of proof, pramana. The next seven concern the sambandha, which is ascertained in the Vedas. The ninth is the abhideya, or means. And the tenth topic concerns the goal, or prayojana. Prem prayojana, right? Prema pumarto mahan. The panchama purushartha. All the four purusharthas, the four great values of human life, the four things for which we all aspire, dharma, artha, kama, and moksha, are rejected by those aspiring for the Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna finishes the Bhagavad Gita by admonishing Arjuna to forget all conventional dharma, sarva dharman parityaja, completely reject it and take shelter in him alone. And the Bhagavatam picks up from the next step. Here's a literature, here's a text for people who have already done this. Dharma prochita kaitava traparamo nirmatsaranam satam. And, by the way, describes the most suitable audience for this literature, for the text. Those whose hearts are pure. Why? Because they don't have any envy. And how is it they don't have any envy? Because they don't have any selfish desires. When Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami discusses this verse in the 22nd chapter of Madhya Lila, he asks, what do we mean when we say, when the Bhagavatam describes these four purusharthas, everything that people can aspire for, as kaitava dharma, as cheating religion? What do we mean by cheating religion? He says, dharma artha kama moksha vancha. Why? Because they're all about me, my virtue, my material progress, my pleasure, and my freedom. But this is a text for those who have gone beyond that. And then there's one even more succinct characterization of the teachings of the Bhagavatam as we hear from Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's given in a book called, I think, The Treasure Chest of Lord Chaitanya's Teachings. And it's attributed to Vishwanath Chakravarti or Srinath Chakravarti. Maybe Srinath is another name for Vishwanath, but I haven't been able to confirm that. So Srila Prabhupada cites parts of this verse throughout his talks and his books. Aradhyo Bhagavan Braje Satanias Tadhama Sri Vrindavanam Ramya Kachiru Pasana Brajabhatu Vargena Vakalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Puranam Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhur Matam Midam Tatrardha Naparaha. The personality of Godhead Sri Krishna, who's known as the son of the king of Brajadam, Sri Nanda Maharaj, is the ultimate worshipful lord of all lords. Similarly, his residential abode, namely the holy place of Vrindavan, is as worshipable as the Lord himself. The ways of his worship may be various, but the one but which was conceived by the circle of the damsels of Brajadam is unsurpassable. Prabhupada cited this pada of the verse frequently. Ramya kachidu pasana brajabadu vargena bhakalpita. There is no way of worshiping Krishna superior to that which is conceived by the gopis, which is ultimately kirtan. We find in the very heart of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the pinnacle of the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, the Gopi Gita, 31st chapter of the 10th canto. And there's the gopis singing a kirtan, praising and condemning Krishna. It's a wonderful chapter. And if you have access to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's commentaries on this verse, I especially commend his commentary on text 9, Tapakatamritam Taptajivanam. It's fun. Srimad Bhagavatam Purana is the unalloyed guidance. Srimad Bhagavatam Amalam Puranam. It's the spotless Purana. The unalloyed guidance for this purpose of approaching the worshipful Lord. And the Thakur says, that is the sum total opinion or cultural philosophy of Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that's, so Srila, this is the gift, this is the treasure that Srila Prabhupada has brought to us. At great sacrifice. He was living comfortably in Vrindavan as a sadhu, but he had this order from his spiritual, it was actually a suggestion, but it was kind of made at the beginning and the end of their personal association. And Srila Prabhupada took this suggestion that he preached to those who speak English, as he wrote at the end, it would be good for you and for them. He took that on his head as an order, and nothing would get in the way of his carrying out that order. As Giriraj Swami likes to say sometimes, this is what he heard from Srila Prabhupada, we may sometimes defer the order of the spiritual master, but we can never neglect the order of the spiritual master. So this is Srila Prabhupada's gift to us. He brought Srimad Bhagavatam, he brought this knowledge to us, which is way beyond anything in the Vedas. It's what the Vedas are meant to aim us toward. And this is the target. So in doing so, Srila Prabhupada has made us all very fortunate. Oti bhagya. This is how Srimad Bhagavatam characterizes the devotees. Oti bhagya. Oti is an intensifier. It means extremely, incalculably. So we're, as I was just commenting to Krishna Murari outside just before, during the kirtan, we're too lucky. But what should we do when we attain good fortune? Share it. So this is Srila Prabhupada's charge to his disciples. And I was noting with some pleasure the transcendental book distribution scores this morning. And I was noting the same thing. In Mayapur, they also announced the number of plates of prasadam distributed, which when I left was up to 17,000 plates of prasadam distributed in Mayapur. And it's going to grow. That number is probably going to grow over the next few weeks as we approach Gaurapurnima, and more pilgrims come, both from around the world, as you know, the devotees coming from around the world, and pilgrims from around India, and especially West Bengal, and if they can, I guess, Bangladesh, to visit Sri Dham Mayapur. And it was my great fortune, by the grace of Vaisheshika Prabhu, that I've never been much of a book distributor. I've always been in awe of those who could do this. I think I'm just too insecure, and I always seem to kind of botch it when I would approach people, and I would just become invisible. I would approach someone and I would become like just invisible. Somehow or other, I couldn't even stop people. So somehow or other, Vaisheshika made me a book distributor as well, because he was arranging for the sending of sets of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita for different devotees to sponsor a set of Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita to be sent to someone. And I thought of someone that I wanted to have a set, and made that donation. And so I'm officially, I guess, a book distributor. I asked him, your score or mine? He smiled and he said, you can have this one, Maharaj. So this is our great fortune that Srila Prabhupada has brought these teachings to us. And our business, our only business, as Vaisheshika likes to say, our family business, is sharing this great treasure, these teachings of Lord Chaitanya with others. So we want to try to take them very seriously, take them into our hearts so that we can share our hearts with others. There's great intellectual subject matter in all the Vedas and in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the best use of our head, the best use of our intellect, is to soften our hearts so that we can share them. We have something worth sharing with others. We want to make, as much as possible, live in the Srimad Bhagavatam so that we can share it with others. I betrayed my ambition this morning of being on time, but I'll take any quick comments or questions. Yes, Prabhu.
So what exactly does tapa mean, and on a day-to-day basis, how do we increase this wealth?
I don't know how I could have done that so we could fit this in. Well, tapa means different things in different contexts. There's tapasya for householders. Tapasya for brahmacharis includes menial service to the spiritual master. As we hear in Srila Prabhupada's purports, not even to take a meal unless instructed to do so by the spiritual master. Of course, our spiritual masters are very kind, and that's implied in all of their instructions, that when it's time to honor prasadam, we honor prasadam, and if it's time not to, we don't. Tapasya for the householders means sharing their wealth for the purposes of the Lord. For the vanaprastas, being unanchored and wandering from pilgrimage place to pilgrimage place to hear from the great sages. And for the sannyasis, to have no business other than becoming Krishna conscious and sharing Krishna consciousness with others. Now, there are other understandings of tapasya as well. Sitting on a bed of nails, immersing yourself in the Ganga, up near Rishikesh in the middle of the winter, or sitting surrounded by fires in the heat of summer, middle of the day in the heat of summer. But what we're after is penance and austerity that soften our hearts, not harden our hearts. So for us, it means immersing ourselves, means drowning ourselves in Harikatha and Kirtan. I think that's the gopis' example. They didn't have anything to do but hear and chant about Krishna, especially after Krishna left. It was just like they were completely lost in Krishna, in Krishna's thought and singing Krishna's glories. When Uddhava was sent to Vrindavan, ostensibly to take a message to the residents of Vrindavan, but actually to get a message from the residents of Vrindavan. This is what it means to be a bhakta. This is what it means to be a Vaishnava. He was overhearing Radharani's mad ramblings to the bumblebee. This is kirtan. This is our life. This is what we want to make our lives. Is that okay? That's a quick answer. Anything else? Yes, sir. Bhakti Kir.
Hare Krishna Maharaj.
The cure for which we all aspire.
Oh, no. Hare Krishna. Really amazing class. Thank you. Do you think there's any particular reason in the translation of 38 that military and musical is categorized as art, while medical and architectural is categorized as science?
The military is often referred to as military science or military art.
Okay. It's just per this verse, then.
Yeah, I'm not sure that there's great significance to that.
Yeah. Also, was
interesting,
that
interesting though, isn't it?
Yeah. Also, was that 17,000 plates a day, a week, a month in Mayapur?
A day.
Hare Krishna.
See, when did I leave? I don't know. What day did I leave? I think I left Sunday, so this was Sunday's score, 17,000 plates. So I imagine it's even greater today. Yeah, it's a lot of prasadam and a lot of books going out there too. Anything? I saw another hand. Yes.
Prabhu. Thank you very much, Maharaj, for the wonderful class. I heard from some devotees, they were telling me that, you know, for devotees, the main tapasya is, you know, following the four regulative principles, which means there is no meat eating, no gambling, no illicit sex, and no intoxication, you know. Yeah, is that true or not, Maharaj?
It's, well, especially at the beginning. Let me see the hands of those for whom this is an austerity nowadays. It's just a matter of course. Maybe early on we used to say, oh, I can't eat that. Or, oh, I can't drink that. But I can't remember how long ago it was that I stopped saying that and just started saying, I don't. It's just not part of my, it's not part of my life. So it is an austerity. I remember once when I was a brahmachari, I think there were probably some of the devotees in the temple, this is Honolulu, probably 70 or 71. And there are probably some devotees who didn't do as much service as others, and the devotees who were working harder than these folks were probably making some complaint. Well, so-and-so is not doing as much service as I am. So our temple president mentioned in one of his classes that for some devotees, for some of us as beginners, it takes all our time and energy to follow these regulative principles and chant 16 rounds. So you've got to give them a little slack. So, and Srila Prabhupada had a list of priorities for how we should prioritize the most important activities in our life. Number one, watch your health. This is my big failing. And I'm constantly getting frowns from those who care about me when I admit, you know, things like sleep, exercise, the things that I ignore. Second, chanting. Third, service. And then fourth was reading. This is our real life. And this is, these, you know, we refer to them as the regulative principles of spiritual life, but really they're just, it's kind of like base human life. You don't waste your energy, you don't waste your wealth gambling, trying to get some wealth that you haven't actually earned, right? Why inflict violence on others? Why exploit others for the pleasure of one of your senses? This is just kind of like base human life, just to help us kind of regulate our senses so that we can gradually focus on meditation on the Supreme Personality of Godhead. After all, this is bhakti yoga. Is that okay?
Thank you, Maharaj.
I'm going to stop here before I get into too much trouble and am never invited back. Granth Raja Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Go, Bhakta Vrinda Ki.